Well, I hope you're ready for a show, because I know we are. It is Friday morning. It is the 22nd of January, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. We're thrilled that you are with us. It's been a very historic week. It's been a long week as far as just a lot of news packed into it. And our job is to navigate through it and try to make sense of it and bring you along with us and welcome your comments and see what you have to say for yourself, too. You can do that by writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And meanwhile, let's talk to our wonderful group assembled this morning. It is a fantastic panel, as it usually is. And if it wasn't, you know, I wouldn't tell them, of course. You know that yourself, yeah. Right? Yeah. Let me introduce everybody. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm pondering Mitch McConnell.
Pondering, yes.
Yeah, pondering Mitch McConnell and whether or not what he is doing is good for the Democrats or bad. I don't think he means it to be good for the Democrats, but we'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Given a deal, if you will, question that is interesting. We'll talk about that, absolutely. Let me also introduce former EPA Regional Administrator, Visiting Professor of Bennington College, President of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enk is here. Good morning, Judith.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Great to have you here. President and CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Buschetti is with us. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Hopefully it's been a good week. Everything all right?
So far.
Okay, good. All right.
Not over yet.
We'll keep that up. Just what, 8, 10, 12 hours left? You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Joe, you set up the framework where you said there's a lot of information this week, and this panel is going to help guide people through all of this information. I feel like I'm an information Sherpa, so I'm feeling a lot of pressure right now.
Sherpa.
You know, David, you are forever my information Sherpa. Absolutely. You always will be. We have a lot to discuss, so we will get to that information. Why wait? So, look, we have the big story, I think, is that we have a new president. And yesterday was his first full day in office, and what do we know? Well, he faces, President Biden faces multiple crises, and he said as much in his first day in office. He raced to show that he was addressing the array of crises awaiting him on his first day, issuing executive orders aimed at combating the coronavirus and preparing measures to take on the struggling economy, as well as other issues. Biden and his team found themselves immediately on what the president called a wartime footing, describing fighting the coronavirus as a national emergency against an already calamitous backdrop of a pandemic that he that has left more than 408,000 Americans dead. An additional 900,000 people filed new unemployment claims last week, underlying a devastated job market. In remarks at the White House State Dining Room, Biden outlined a new national strategy for combating the virus, signing 10 executive orders and other documents to streamline the federal government response, move toward reopening schools and businesses, ensure safer travel, and increase vaccinations, among other goals. He called on Americans to mask up for the next 100 days, saying that doing so could save more than 50,000 lives. His tone was notably sober, contrasting not only with former President Donald Trump's rhetoric, which was often full of superlatives and grand promises, but also with the tone of other presidents on many occasions. He said, quote, "Let me be very clear, things are going to continue to get worse before they get better," adding that the death toll would probably top 500,000 next month. "And let me be equally clear," he said, "we will get through this. We will defeat this pandemic." So that's how you start, and that's how he started yesterday, which is, sobering, but the truth. Right, Alan?
Right. No, I think he did exactly the right thing. He wants to say, you know, we'll get through it, but on the other hand, he's saying 100,000 more of us are going to die. That is a very sobering thought, because nobody wants to be that. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. Up until now, what were you going to do? There was nothing you could do. You could wear a mask, you could wash your hands, you could socially distance. But now that we're all so close to getting the vaccine, we're talking a month or 2 months, people are getting nervous, and you have a president saying, okay, but 100,000 more people will die. And it is, you know, I'll get a letter today or two saying, stop being so, you know, so down. But the fact is that this is a real calamitous situation. Now, I just want to say, and I referenced Mitch McConnell before, this is a real interesting one. We know that Joe Biden has a lot of work to do. He has his cabinet. He's got to get him through. He has a majority leader, Chuck Schumer, but hardly that because, you know, it's split evenly with McConnell. And we know that Biden is counting on working with McConnell. So I'm a little concerned as to whether or not there's a deal here. You know, in other words, you know, it's obvious that McConnell thinks that the longer we wait on an impeachment trial, the longer that last guy in the White House whose name I don't want to mention, is out, you can believe that the less people are going to have this bloodthirst for his impeachment. And I'm sure that's what McConnell and the Republicans are thinking. As for Biden, you know, Biden, it seems to me, makes out rather well if this thing gets pushed up to mid-February so that he can get his appointments through and he can get his legislation through. And we got to at least face that fact.
Senator Mitch McConnell's call to delay former President Donald Trump's trial left the timetable uncertain as party leaders wrangled over the basics of a functioning Senate. And basically, the deal is, okay, we'll wait till mid-February, and that, as Alan points out, complicates the hopes of reaching a swift agreement to prevent the proceedings from interfering with the crucial first weeks of Biden's tenure. McConnell made the request in a day when Mr. Biden's call for unity was already running into partisan dysfunction in the Senate. McConnell and Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, who is now the majority leader, were locked in a separate stalemate over how they would share power and whether Democrats would promise to preserve a Republicans' ability to filibuster legislation. David Soares.
Look, I think we're covering a whole host of topics here, and as confusing as it is for us to tackle all of these issues, imagine for a moment what it must be like to be President Joseph Biden, who, you know, takes office with a staggering number of 408,000 COVID deaths, and then 900,000 new, you know, unemployment filings this week. And so, I think the best thing I've read this week has been the quote by Rahm Emanuel, who said that Lincoln had the Civil War, Wilson had the pandemic, Roosevelt had the Depression, Kennedy had the height of the Cold War, Johnson had an unprecedented civil and social strife, but Biden has D, all of the above.
Right.
And, you know, even though he has all of these concrete issues that he's got to stare and address, you know, then there's the political backdrop and the theater that's going on right now between, you know, McConnell and the Senate. And so, we need to buckle up. We need to buckle up and brace for, you know, more unprecedented events in the coming weeks. You know, as far as the impeachment trial, I think we can get to that. Because there are pros and cons for both sides. Certainly, time never favors the prosecutor when it comes to trials, and so delays aren't very healthy to get resolution, but there are also some benefits here, and we'll talk about that.
Judith Henk.
Well, I think we should first savor the moment of the incoming Biden presidency. It is the return of competency in the federal government, and it was so obvious in the last 2 days. And I can only imagine what the months ahead are going to be like. But, you know, they've got to clean up so much of the Trump messes that are in every single agency. They've made excellent appointments. I've noticed they've brought on board a lot of key leadership people in the different agencies that do not require Senate confirmation. So they're getting people in place. And this is incredibly urgent in the health arena. So, you know, Biden has these multiple crises, as David has described. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for the Senate to delay impeachment trial for a few weeks because, you know, there's a lot going on. Like, Biden does have to get his cabinet confirmed. He does have to pass a bipartisan COVID relief bill because people are just desperate. You know, Heather articulates the challenges of small businesses. You've got longer and longer food lines at food pantries and soup kitchens. Healthcare system is completely overwhelmed. We're all focused on vaccine, but also just the provision of healthcare in hospitals and doctor's offices is really, really stretched. So I think getting congressional action on COVID, getting the cabinet confirmed, it's absolutely imperative that the impeachment trial happen. But two things to keep in mind. One is passage of time may not be the friend to prosecutors, but it also allows for more chilling information to come out about how the takeover of the Capitol was planned. I read yesterday that many Trump campaign staff were directly involved in planning that event. I think the more that comes out on that, the better. And secondly, you know, Trump hired a South Carolina election law lawyer recommended by Lindsey Graham to be his lead attorney in the impeachment trial. That's not going to turn out well. So, you know, I think the key thing is that it's happening, and I don't think it's crucial whether it happens next week, the following week. It just needs to happen, say, within a month or 6 weeks.
Heather Bruschetti.
Yeah, you know, I agree with Judith, and I have an additional thought, and maybe it's a little bit, cynical, but I think having some distance and time from the events of January 6th allows some of the Republican senators to find cause to pull themselves away from him. Don't forget, they still have their base. They still, you know, they still have large segments of the population who supported him. The more stuff comes out about this, I think the worse the president is going to look, and it will give, you know, it will basically not cover, but it will give some more understanding to why some of these senators might not be on Team Trump anymore. So I think that the passage, delaying it on a personal level, I think absolutely passing a relief package should be job one. You know, let's get his appointees confirmed, get his cabinet confirmed, and let's get that package done quickly. So I think that should be the priority anyways over the trial. But I think that one of the reasons McConnell is willing to delay is because as more negative facts come out, it will give them a little bit of cover.
And Alan, isn't that what you were saying? Mm-hmm. So it brings us back to what, I guess, in other words, what is Mitch McConnell up to here?
Well, first of all, I think Heather's right. I think we all understand that Mitch is thinking, you know, as this thing recedes, people will stop caring about Trump. There won't be the same kind of anger, the same kind of get 'em sort of thing that there has been, properly, because everybody has to be held accountable. But I think that's what is on Mitch's mind. And I want to point out something else, Joe, and that is that the Supreme Court of the United States is going to get involved in this. There is no precedent in terms of, you know, a president. There's precedent in terms of judges and others. And I go to David Soares on this. But basically, there's no real precedent. And you've got a largely Trump Supreme Court. And as conservative, as you know, the Chief Justice has been a big supporter of presidential power. So they may check in also and say, forget it, Jack. We're not going to do this. David, what do you think?
You know, the one thing about Trump that he has, I will say this, the only good thing that this man has done in the course of the last 4 years is he's become the absolute best constitutional law teacher that all constitutional lawyers have ever had, because no one has tested the limits of our American Constitution more so than this man. No one has skirted through those gaps in the Constitution where we've always relied on civility and the social contract. No one has ever skirted through all of those gaps like this president, forcing not only the Supreme Court, as Alan said, but also forcing Congress to relook at the Constitution, to come up with possible legislation to fill those gaps, because no one could have ever imagined that there would be a president who would do such violence to our Constitution. And I agree with you, Alan. The Supreme Court's going to have to get involved in this case, because we are on brand new territory and brand new terrain where there's ample debate on all sides about a variety of different issues. Now, in this specific case, I'm a little more cynical than perhaps the rest of my colleagues on the panel, because a delay for 2 weeks really cuts both ways. It cuts both ways in this instance. The more time goes by, the more imagery we're going to be seeing on TV about what's transpired at the Capitol on January 6th.
Right.
The more time that goes by, the more information that the Department of Justice is gathering, the more information that the House, through its investigations about people doing tours, certainly the night before and days prior to that event, the more information comes out, which doesn't bode well for members of Congress. And I think we all have to remember this, that I think this is one of the most important things. Let's not forget.
So about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
That the jurors of the trial, are also unindicted co-conspirators. I mean, Mr. Hawley and Mr. Cruz, they're like the Hall and Oates of the insurrection, right? And there's so many other senators and members of the House that were backup vocalists to all of this. And so this is a complicated thing. But my point is, I think it's more about Mitch McConnell getting polling data to see where Trump is before they make a decision.
Hall and Oates of the insurrection. Yeah, you heard him right. We'll have more great little beaumont like that when we come back. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Judah Thank, Heather Bruschetti, and David Soares making up the panel. We will continue our discussion after this news break from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judah Thank, Heather Bruschetti, and David Soares. Right before the break, David was making a point. Does anybody want to comment on that?
I do.
Okay.
I think we also have to reflect on the historic moment we were in. A few Wednesdays ago, the Capitol was stormed. 5 people died. The following Wednesday, the House impeached the sitting president. The following week, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were inaugurated. That's a lot in 3 weeks. And I think, we all have long to-do lists, but I don't think the Senate can really keep up with that pace. And I think McConnell needs a little bit of a breather, not for anything particularly good, because he's done such damage to our great nation. But as I think Heather said, he needs to see the polling. And I think what's motivating McConnell more than anything is if you get to that very challenging 2/3 vote in the Senate to impeach, it then can be followed by only a majority vote of keeping the previous president from ever running for office again. And I think McConnell is calculating, does the Republican Party survive if Trump runs in 2024, either as a Republican or as a Patriot Party candidate, as he's starting to murmur about? And I think McConnell's just trying to make that political calculation. And an additional point on how steep the mountain is to climb to get all the necessary votes in the Senate. My understanding is you just need to get 2/3 of who's in the chamber at the time. not two-thirds of the elected senators. So, you know, some of the senators who have wobbly spines might just not show up that day.
I mean, sick day.
I used to see that in the state legislature a lot. People would just kind of disappear when a key vote had to come. And then, you know, when we passed the bottle bill in 1983, we had to get to 76 votes in the assembly. And suddenly key people just vanished. And when the 77th vote came, there was this mad rush out of the men's room where they all came to the floor and voted because it was passing anyway. So you might have senators hiding and not cast a vote at all that gets them to the number they need. That's kind of the weird internal Senate politics that Schumer and McConnell know better than anyone. And they are talking, I am sure.
Alan? Heather, go ahead.
Sure, Heather.
Yeah, I was just going to say a couple things. First, I agree with Judith. I think he is doing a calculation, but I also think that some of the things that come out between now and the trial might give some spinal fortitude to some of the senators. I think that's a possibility. And the end game, if they feel that the former president has damaged the Republican Party, which I certainly believe he has. And I think you see that. I mean, lots of, not elected, but prominent Republicans and companies have pulled away from the party because of some of the president's policies. I think this will give them a strategy to prevent him from reestablishing himself as the party standard bearer. And the other thing I just wanted to say is, really, Hall and Oates? David, I'm like, you couldn't think of anyone cooler or less? I mean, it scares me.
Although they are. Go ahead.
I'm just hoping that some letter writers here who are Hall and Oates fans, you know, show some proper respect, you know, when they're authoring those letters, because those two dudes were just amazing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, they are. So Hall lives in our region, right? And then
John Hall, former member of Congress.
No,
he
that's
was in,
no,
he
no,
was
different
in Orleans.
Guy. That's
He's
a different,
different
guy. Different guy.
Yeah. I like that John Hall. That John Hall is awesome.
You like the other Hall too. I'm
the
sure.
other Hall is tremendous.
And then, but they both they grew up in the town I grew up in Pennsylvania, and North right. Wales, Pennsylvania.
Here comes 10,000 letters on Hall and Oates.
On Hall and Oates. That's all you need.
I'm
so sorry that this Sherpa has led the conversation so far afield. Going back to what Heather just said and what Judith just said about polling and what the temperature of the Republican Party is, I think there's a lot to be gained by just doing a simple analysis of what both Republican leaders have done over the course of the last week. We've had two Republican leaders completely deride the president publicly for the very first time in 4 years, and that was shortly after the chaos at the Capitol. And then all of a sudden, we've had both McCarthy and McConnell all of a sudden taking sort of a different approach. And so, you know, you question as to why. And I think that there's probably some Republican polling that they're aware of that we're not aware of just yet. And they're trying to rally their troops against this trial. That's just my take.
Is that your official response, Alan?
My official response is that I think first of all, we got one letter reminding us to always say convict rather than impeach in the Senate. That's a good point.
That's right, because it's already been convicted, yeah. Impeached.
Thank you.
And I think we're all guilty of that at some point, because impeachment is like the word Congress. You see, we always say the House of Representatives is referred to as Congress. But the Congress, of course, is both the Senate and the House of Representatives. So people use those terms interchangeably. I think everybody gets the idea that impeachment, means throw him out, although certainly our wonderful letter writer is correct that we ought to do it right here and not talk so much about you know what. Hall and Oates, that is. So I'm just going to say that McConnell needs, of course, he's going to need Schumer. And we had at least one letter that said, is Schumer tough enough to take on McConnell? Well, McConnell is one tough guy, that's for sure. Schumer, I've known him for a long time. I remember when he came up to Channel 13, where I was working at the time, and he took me out and he said, I'm going to be the next senator. I'm going to be D'Amato. And I said, oh, well, you know, not really. With my usual brilliance, I said, not really. He's got the rabbi, and he's got this guy, and he's got that guy. He says, I got the other rabbi, and I've got this and that. He turned over the napkin, and he wrote on it who he had and why he was going to win, and he was right. So he may not be as bad a guy as we know McConnell is, but I think he's got the goods. I think he's got the goods to be able to deliver. At least I hope so.
We have a question from Jim, which I'm going to read into a little bit. He says, always a great show, which we thank him for that. But the question being, does Mitch McConnell still run the Senate? Meaning, how much chutzpah does he have saying, okay, this should be the plan? Because it's not really his place at this point. He's basically putting a suggestion in the suggestion box, right?
Well, the answer, of course, is he's got plenty of power. He's got 50 senators, and we have a president who said he has to get along. He, the new president, has to get along with Mitch McConnell, and McConnell knows that. So he does have a lot of power. Judith, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I mean, just as we've been saying that Biden is the man for this moment. I think this is the moment for Chuck Schumer, and it's not going to be easy with a 50-50 tie, but he knows the Senate rules just as well as McConnell does. He's got the tie-breaking vote. I wouldn't be surprised if he was courting some disaffected Republicans to flip. He only needs one, really. And I really think Schumer was born for this moment. I think he's going to do just fine. And he's going to have a really close relationship with Biden and his appointees. It's going to be seamless. So I have great confidence they're going to get a good COVID relief package through. I want Biden to quickly nominate federal judges. Let's not wait, because there is a chance that in 2 years, at least one of the houses flips to Republican. You know, the Democrats. Yeah, the Democrats took a beating 2 years ago in the House, or I'm sorry, two months ago in the House. Yeah, November. So Biden has to move fast, and I think Schumer's an excellent dance partner for him, along with Pelosi. But like now, they got to get it done. A lot has to get done in the next few months for the health of the people and for the economy to survive.
Heather or David, want to weigh in?
Yeah, I think Schumer is going to be great. Honestly, he's a master of retail politics. He's been super accessible to the business council. He's always got someone willing to help on issues that come up. We've reached out to them on, and he certainly has been around. I mean, he's got the political chops. I think that it's going to be good for New York State. Hopefully it has the same, impact on our state as it has had on Kentucky. I mean, when you go back to, Governor Cuomo's comments about us being a large donor state, you see that the largest recipient state is Kentucky. So I'd like to see a little bit of a reversal of that. And if that translates at the end of the day to, additional federal resources coming to New York, I think that's a good thing because we could use them.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue and we will read some letters, and we will also continue our conversation with our terrific panel. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Heather Brichetti, and David Soares. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Hall & Oates bringing us in on this Super Friday.
People are dancing.
What you mean you haven't got any Hall? You mean you haven't got any Hall & Oates to play at the break?
That's what we played. That's
oh,
all.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry. I'm so dumb. Yeah. Thank you.
That was Hall & Oates. I am shocked you don't have them on your playlist, Alan. Come on.
No, I don't. They came after the Weavers.
Yeah,
they?
Post-Weavers, I believe. Yeah. 1975, but still.
I'm not as confident about where we proceed from here. And I'll say this.
You're not talking about Hall & Oates. You're talking about Schumer, right?
Yeah, I am. Because I think two of the most brilliant people, and I hate to say it about one of them, but two of the most brilliant people that we currently have in our Congress is one, Nancy Pelosi. Do not sleep on Nancy Pelosi. She is brilliant. And the other person, in the most devious way, is Mitch McConnell. You know, we have seen this man, cling to power even in the minority. He is a master of parliamentary impediments, right? And I think that he is going to use this 50-50, deadlock that we seem to be in at this moment. He's going to maximize and squeeze that fruit for every bit of juice that he can get. And so I do have some concerns. And then I think, look, certainly the 20th was a great day for those of us who wanted to see change. But the battle is just beginning, and I think Alan alluded to the fact that we have another campaign in 2022 that will ultimately decide the balance of power in the Senate. You know, I believe that there are, is it 34 seats that are up in the coming election in 2022 with 14 Democrats and 20 Republicans? And so I think we have to continue to deliver that message that the battle isn't won. We have to continue to move forward and fight.
I just want to say a negative word about Mitch McConnell, if people don't object. I don't think he's that brilliant a strategist. We're giving him too much credit. He sold his soul to Donald Trump. He made it very clear he didn't like what Trump was doing. He recently said he'd be happy if he never spoke to him again. And what did he get for that? Yes, he got a bunch of terrible judges, but he also, this past election cycle, he lost being the majority leader in the Senate. You know, the former twice impeached president did not get a second term. And so you've got all three houses of government now controlled by Democrats. I think we're giving McConnell too much credit. I think he sold his soul and he didn't get the power that he wanted. So I think Schumer is going to manage him just fine. And he and Biden need to go directly to the people and make their case and not get all tied up in McConnell's Senate shenanigans.
I think, though, if you look, to push back gently, though, Judith, mm-hmm. I mean, three Supreme Court justices, not to mention all the lower court justices, is, I mean, that's pretty powerful. Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good finagling.
And remember, that we have a madman who's just left the presidency, really a madman. And I think the thing that really convinced so many neutrals in the middle was the idea that we can't have this national embarrassment anymore. It didn't transfer to the Republicans all that much. They continued to win their lower offices, and we know that. I'm no McConnell fan, that's for sure. I am a huge Biden fan, and I think Biden knows how to play McConnell, and he will. And in this mm-hmm. case, I think Biden makes out. Doesn't he, Judith? I mean, when you think about it, doesn't Biden win? Because as you and everybody else on the panel said before, Biden's got a lot of business he has to do, and getting past people's anger at Trump is really important. But, you know, he's a smart guy.
Hmm.
Yep, and hey, my goodness, what an agenda he has just for the next
Absolutely.
Few weeks. I think the first test is,
I think they've played it perfectly.
Judith's saying getting the COVID bill through first. Yes. Okay. David, go ahead.
No, what I was saying is I think, and I apologize for stepping on you, Judith. I do think that they've played it perfectly because Joe Biden can be the good cop here where, you know, either Nancy mm-hmm. Pelosi or Chuck Schumer can continue to be the bad cop. I think if we are playing that high level of chess, you know, it's going to have to be Biden moving first with COVID, right, and putting the Republican, you know, Senate in a corner of saying no and continuing to project them as the obstructionist. But then I also think they ought to move right after that with something that's not going to be controversial at all, which is an infrastructure bill, and weaponize Pete Buttigieg, who can basically go to some of these senators, especially those that are on the fence like Murkowski, and offer her new bridges and offer her new roads and continue to do that all the way down the line where you think you can amass, you know, anywhere from 10 to 17 Republicans to further a lot of your other political agendas.
Not to be overly cynical, but you have to get them confirmed first. Where are we on that, do you think?
Well, Buttigieg was confirmed. Yes. Well, his hearing was yesterday.
Yeah, his hearing was yesterday.
It was a love fest, and I'm sure he'll be quickly confirmed.
And the rest?
Well, his security person got approved.
Yeah,
right?
We're up to two, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that dreadful Hawley, Senator Hawley, not part of his official title, he blocked the Homeland Security person. Like,
right.
Isn't this the moment we need a good Homeland Security person confirmed?
Let's go to some letters. We go to Wayne. Cuomo complains loudly about New York paying more in federal taxes than it receives in federal monies. There is nothing unfair about this. We have a progressive income tax. Wealthy people pay more taxes proportionally. New York as a state is wealthier than Kentucky. New York should pay more in taxes than Kentucky per person. Kentucky as a state is poorer than New York. Kentucky should receive more federal money for health care, school aid, etc. That from Wayne. Heather, you want in?
That doesn't even come close to capturing the full picture. You know, our Medicaid reimbursement rates are lower than other states, and that has nothing to do with how much we pay in taxes. It has to do with federal government's approval of our spending plan. We are one of very few states that are a donor state, and the fact that there is a progressive income tax doesn't mean that we should also punish the state by taking away deductibility of state and local taxation, for example, which impacts New York and probably not Kentucky. So it's not just about the progressive nature of the income tax. It's a lot more than that. The amount of spending on defense, for example, and military is much higher per person in Kentucky than it is in New York. So there's a lot that goes into it, but at the end of the day, if we're part of a republic and we are agreeing to be part of this country, you can't consistently be punishing the states that are supporting the rest of the country. It's just not right.
We have
on deductibility. Don't you all think that that there's a very good chance now that we'll get deductibility back?
I don't think it's going to come back to the full deductibility that it once was, because it's very expensive.
Catherine writes to us, what steps can we ordinary citizens take to support convicting Trump and hold others accountable for their actions? What do
we
do?
Well, you know, this is an interesting point, because think about this, everybody. We are daily learning more and more and more about Trump's actions and what he's done. If you postpone the trial, David says it's tougher on the prosecutors. But I think in this case, they're looking through drawers right now. We're going to find an awful lot of stuff that will get people even angrier. That's a possibility, isn't it?
Yes, and you're going to have a lot of career staff suddenly coming forward with documents and information that I'm sure they're happy to share with the new administration. But in response to the letter writer, I'm reminded of when FDR met with a group of activists after he was elected. In one meeting, he said, "You're right, now make me do it." And so all of the energy that people put into trying to resist the Trump administration for the last 4 years, I mean, we can take a weekend off, but we have to get right back to it. And so it's contacting members of Congress to say that you expect, you know, a comprehensive impeachment trial in the Senate. I think most of the U.S. senators in the WAMC listening area are on board with that, but it's, you know, reaching out to people in other parts of the country. If you know anyone in Utah, get them to call Mitt Romney.
And I know we've touched on this, and certainly Alan has been beating this drum, but and then holding others accountable as well, not just Trump, but mm-hmm. the others. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with Judith, but I would also point out one strategy that one organization has used, I think, most effectively. I mean, the reality of a New Yorker generating a letter to an elected official that they have no, you know, bonding to, I don't know how effective that would be. But the Lincoln Project decided to take a very different step and really go after donors. And I think that if you're a consumer, if you're a New Yorker and you're sitting, you know, at home and you're wondering what you can do to hold Donald Trump accountable, I think it's got to be looking at the corporations that are providing resources to some of Trump's enablers and doing what the Lincoln Project is doing. I also want to point out one thing that is so different between now, actually two things that are different between this trial and the last trial. And the thing is that with the last trial, every time there was a nugget of fact, I mean, fact from whether it was the Mueller report or something else, you know, Donald Trump, through social media and through his allies at Fox and some of the more conservative media, they were able to just beat down the facts that were put out there and created an entirely a different information ecosystem. You know, by Trump being banned from a lot of these platforms, I think I was reading somewhere the amount of disinformation by mm-hmm. blocking Trump on all these different social media declined by 73%. Yeah, you know, I think Judith is absolutely right. You have, you know, people who are now looking through drawers in every department, but you also have the added benefit of not having this counter message that is going to be delivered, this misinformation through that ecosystem. So those conditions are very different.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Heather Bruschetti, and David Soares making up the panel. Panel at WAMC.org if you'd like in and would like to share your thoughts with us. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Before we move on to some other stuff, I would like to get to the many letters that we have here. I'll try to get to as many as possible. David writes, if Trump somehow steals his core to a new party, how does a seriously split Republican Party win back the House or Senate in 2022?
Anyone? It doesn't. I hope he does it.
I think they have to have better candidates. That's all. You know, that's That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Trump will continue to pour gasoline on the Republican Party. You know, I think the 2022 elections are pivotal. And, I think I said that you had, 14 Dems and 20 Republicans. And, you know, if I'm Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, I'd be very worried about maintaining his seat. And, the question then becomes, can Warnock in Georgia maintain his victory again by defending it? And can Mark Kelly in Arizona, can he defend his seat, in 2022, rather?
And those remember, are important questions. And David, Senator Padilla, the new senator from California, he has to run next year. So, you know, it's California. He'll win that. But, it's like one screw up in the whole balance of power can change.
And I want to inject into this Trump's often quoted antipathy towards some Republicans who he thinks really screwed him over. So it may be that we're going to see how powerful Trump is if, in fact, because we know he's capable of this, he decides to get involved in primaries and to try to oust some of the Republicans who are there, which will, of course, I don't believe help the Republican Party.
Barbara writes, if impeachment trial is delayed until mid-February, then its very legitimacy needs to be decided by the Supreme Court. Could this mean a delay until late spring or summer?
Yes.
Dick writes about Chris Krebs and says, is there any thought to bringing back Christopher Krebs, who I think we all feel was let go out of spite by the last administration? TBD, right? To be determined.
Well, he's set up a consulting firm where he's probably making 10 times the amount of money that he was making as a federal official. There's a long list of really capable people who were let go or fired by Trump, and I'm sure the Biden people are talking to them if they want to come back.
Audrey says, you asked what ordinary people could do. Ordinary people can research which companies still support Hawley and the like and inform those companies about their now lost business. Jerry says, now Fox News is claiming that Biden is going to throw conservatives into concentration camps. No hope for America until Fox's license is revoked. Imagine if Al-Qaeda had a TV station in the U.S. in the wake of 9/11, would have been shuttered post-haste. I do not know of the claim. Does anyone know what the reference is there to conservatives in concentration camps? I don't know.
No.
I thought
Fox News's coverage of January 6th was fairly balanced, just straight reporting. So I don't know. I don't think personally. I mean, there's definitely some opinion folks on, you know, but I think their straight news reporting, they may get back to being a little bit more balanced. At least that was the evidence from January 6th, in my view.
Well, I looked the last 2 days because it is a parallel universe, and they were spending a lot of time on the Beau Biden story when the inauguration was coming. And I just want to make sure everyone knows that Jeanine Pirro, who was quite a Trump supporter, her husband or ex-husband, I don't know which, Nick Pirro, got a pardon, along with the rogues gallery of criminals that were pardoned the night before Inauguration Day.
Interesting.
So that'll keep, you know, at least Jeanine Pirro on message with Trump.
According to business...
Yeah, I've been sitting here trying to figure out how I could get a Tupac reference in to see if I could get it played on the break, but you know, Lil Wayne got pardoned. There's one.
Yeah, we were...
Kodak Black. Two rappers.
Fox News.
I have lost all street credibility today with my Hall & Oates reference. I cannot show my face.
We have a letter.
I love it. I think it should be the theme music of the roundtable.
We have a letter on that, which I'll read in a second. But I do want to mention that Business Insider is reporting that Fox News dedicated multiple segments on Monday and Tuesday to a new conspiracy theory, basically floating the false idea that Democrats, big tech, and the news media are pushing for re-education camps or transforming reforming or forms of reprogramming in the wake of the January 6th insurrection on Capitol Hill. I guess one of the hosts of Mike Huckabee's show, Outnumbered, said, is the plan to cram everyone into a digital re-education camp, or are they going to set up a concentration camp in communist China to make sure everyone gets re-educated and deprogrammed? So just the reference there I wanted to spell out a little bit.
That doesn't sound like a serious reference. It sounds like someone musing, but okay.
Esteemed panel, I encourage fellow listeners to pledge to the lockbox as I'm doing this minute in support of free speech. In particular, David Soares' frequent references to vintages of popular music that most would retreat from with haste. His often questionable musical choices deserve our audience and the less cultured among us to gain from his bravery. We need to hear each other, the good and the bad. And thank you, Mr. Soares, for raising the bar so high, tongue firmly in cheek. That from Rich. All right. Mark says, I have been wondering for some time what you would all talk about if Trump was not around as president. Listening today, it's clear you are so enamored with Trump that you can do nothing else. He is gone, done, let's all move on. Who cares if he will be impeached? He will never win another election. I think you all still have Trump derangement syndrome. Who would like to respond to Mark?
You mean convicted. You don't mean impeached. He has been impeached.
I'd like to respond to Mark. I mean, listen, it's not as if something like Trump goes away and all of a sudden all of the issues that he's in and all of the, quite frankly, destructive deeds that he's engaged in over the course of the last 4 years go away. We're not talking about Trump, but we're talking about just what lays ahead for this administration as well as this country and repairing the damage done. So I guess we shouldn't be talking about the Paris Climate Accord. I guess we shouldn't be talking about immigration, and I guess we shouldn't be talking about the global economy as it relates to China and some of our other partners. All of those things that he has laid waste to over the course of the last 4 years. I don't enjoy having conversations about a fool that we elected as president in the last go around, but we do have to talk about.
Uh-oh.
Who's dog? Who has the... Heather, do you have a dog? No, somebody
I have two dogs, but I actually, from my house right now, you would only be able to hear chickens and horses.
Oh, okay. All right. We hear dog walking. I didn't know.
Lily had a lot to say to Mark, too.
Dog, I got you. Okay, Lily. I'm sorry.
Calming her down.
I want to jump on that last comment by David and say I agree with him because this country came very, very close to electing a fascist for the second time who would move this country into totalitarianism and fascism. Mm-hmm. We can never forget that, because if we do, we're fools.
I want to just mention that the breaking news of the moment is that, according to Chuck Schumer on the floor of the Senate, that Nancy Pelosi is expected to deliver impeachment articles or the article of impeachment to the Senate on Monday. So there was some question yesterday, a lot of question, obviously, as to when that would actually be delivered. So we now know that it'll be delivered on Monday. So as soon as we find out more about
that. Hopefully not by the U.S. Postal Service.
You're right about that. And by the way,
holiday cards this week.
No, there's no question. There's no question. I mailed something to a doctor. I was told it would be there the next day. It came 7 days later.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good, but God bless the Postal Service and what they're trying to do.
Sure. Yeah, it's
trying
Trump,
really
it's
hard.
It's the Trump legacy. It's the Trump legacy.
I love our postman, Bob, but he's as screwed by the post office as everybody else is.
Let's see. Tom says, if all Joe Biden achieves during the next 4 years is what he accomplished in his first day of office, plus getting the pandemic under control, then he will be remembered as 1,000% better than his predecessor. I believe people are hungering for competency. Let's see. Judith, here you go. For Judith, do you think President Biden should shut down the illegal Dakota Pipeline as he did with the Keystone Pipeline? By the way, it's so nice to be able to say the president's name after 4 years of only being willing to name the prior one by his number.
Yes. I think Joe Biden has advanced a very responsible climate change package. He's going to invest in renewables and energy efficiency. But at the same time, you cannot fund fossil fuel infrastructure like pipelines and power plants and ethylene cracker plants to make plastic, because we cannot continue to pump massive amounts of carbon and methane into the atmosphere. Because that infrastructure, you build it today, it's going to last 40, 50, 60 years.
So on that subject, the front page of the paper today was talking about President Biden's environmental actions and looking at what he has done, the status of the Trump administration's environmental rollbacks. Two have been overturned, 58 have been targeted, 144 not yet targeted. This according to the Washington Post. The new president is unwinding Trump's climate change legacy while forging his own. How are things looking, Judith?
Very encouraging. I was so delighted to hear President Biden address climate change in his inaugural address. He said, "A cry for survival comes from the planet itself, a cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear." And he's absolutely right. So he has already signed some 17 executive orders. A number of them have to do with climate. He's rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement, which is so important to get international cooperation to drive down carbon emissions. John Kerry, his top international climate person, said that the requirements of Paris Agreement are the floor, not the ceiling. As was mentioned, the president canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, and he needs to do that with other pipelines. And, you know, reversing these Trump rollbacks is going to have real benefit to the public. For instance, one of the first things they're addressing is Trump's gutting of fuel efficiency standards. Well, people don't want to spend more at the gas pump for gasoline. You know, they're looking to protect farm workers. Biden is protecting national monuments. And then an issue that you might not put in the environmental bucket is Biden is signing an executive order stopping the construction of the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, which is important for all the obvious reasons, but many environmental conservation groups have opposed the wall because it would threaten 8 species with extinction. You know, the world is embracing the new Biden climate policies. Macron of France said, "Welcome back to the Paris Agreement." But now there's a lot of work to do. And I think Biden has done quite a bit in the first 2 days of his administration, and he's put together an excellent team that I think will implement his goals.
Let's go to some letters here, and then we'll move on to some other topics before our bottom of the hour break. We go to Dean, who says, "I think you have it all wrong. If Trump runs for anything, he'll run for governor of Florida as a Republican, and he'll win. Then he'll have his own little corrupt empire to rule over." Susan writes, "The For the People Act, the first bill in the Senate that addresses democracy reforms such as voting, gerrymandering, ethics, and accountability, is now on the floor. For the last 4 years, many wondered where were the brakes on the Republicans' power grab, the systematic effort to weaken our democracy. Passing this bill would do so much, as I am sure the Republican leadership, supported as it is by big business, is still going in the same direction with or without Trump." Anyone on that? It sounds like a Heather issue, but I'll ask. Or not. All right.
Sorry about that. I'm not really sure what the question is, though.
Yeah, they're asking about
tending to her chicken.
I'm sorry? Tending to the chickens? Is that
tending to her chicken?
No. I'm just not clear on.
So the For the People Act, and asking about this bill, passing of this bill, and the leadership supported, and the letter writer says, supported as it is by big business, where will it bring us with or without Trump?
I'm dreadfully ignorant here. I don't know what this act is.
Okay.
I know I'm not supposed to admit I don't know everything, but I'm not sure what it is.
No, I respect that. I let's go instead then to, I listened yesterday to the press briefing with Dr. Fauci, who looked relaxed and, of course, so knowledgeable. The press secretary was respectful and answered questions and answered the ones that she could. How refreshing. Yeah, it was, right? That I think we're all in agreement
on
that.
What a relief. It was such a comfort to see him. I thought the whole interview was really well done, and I thought even when he was trying, you know, they were trying to get him to say bad things, he didn't really say anything bad other than, well, it's nice to be here and be able to speak freely.
Yeah.
He's such a good guy. We had a funny experience. Yeah. My husband and I were on a Zoom, and we had Jen Psaki's first press briefing on mute, and Mark said, that new press secretary, she just keeps smiling. It's like you don't see that from the podium much. And she's doing an outstanding job. I mean, it feels like the West Wing is back.
It really does. And she's, and the experience she has in the post as a press secretary in really hard situations obviously comes through in this. But I mean, obviously, we're only into second day.
I think there is a certain sigh of relief when we're hearing truth again from that podium, because it's important to hear truth from that podium. And it was wonderful to see Dr. Fauci, but under no circumstances should we – look, I understand there is a celebratory sort of feeling in the air, but, you know, 400,000 people that have perished as a result of the amazing failure of the previous administration, with another 100,000, projected for the coming month. You know, and seeing Dr. Fauci there is a reminder that we're not on offense here. We're finally starting to mount a defense.
Okay. That came out well, David. It was kind of a buzzkill at the beginning, but you brought it in at the end. That's good.
Well, you're gonna play good songs at the end, so we'll bring it back up.
That's good. On Fauci, he says he is able to speak freely now. This from the Washington Post. One of the defining moments of the early effort to control the spread of the coronavirus came during a White House briefing in late March. President Donald Trump was enamored by the idea that the anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine might offer significant benefit in treating COVID, the disease caused by the virus. Anthony Fauci, the government's leading infectious disease expert, had previously indicated his skepticism to the point. A reporter asked Fauci directly whether Americans should place hope in the drug. There really isn't that much of a difference in many respects with what we're saying, he replied diplomatically. The president feels optimistic about something, his feeling about it. What I'm saying is that it might be effective. I'm not saying that it isn't. It might be effective. As a scientist, Fauci continued, he needed to see data demonstrating that it worked and was safe, but his difference with Trump was simply, quote, a question of how one feels about it. It wasn't hard to read between the lines, really. Some people feel that recommending medicine should only follow tests to ensure that those medicines would harm people and will actually work. Others, like the then president of the United States, feel otherwise. Over the months that followed, Fauci was a regular frustration to Trump, given that same prioritization of accuracy and research and science over gut feelings and platitudes. Eventually, Trump elevated Scott Atlas from doing a Fox News interview to serving on his coronavirus team, on which Atlas advocated a Doolittle approach more in line with Trump's preferences. Mm-hmm. Fauci spoke to the media regularly, but was clearly sidelined within the White House. As of noon Wednesday, there is a new White House, and Fauci, speaking to reporters on Thursday afternoon, was clearly enjoying being unshackled. At one point, for example, he was asked whether an offer from Amazon to aid the vaccine distribution effort would have been welcomed during the Trump administration. Fauci said he didn't know. Then he celebrated his ability to offer that response. Quote, one of the new things in this administration is that if you don't know the answer, don't guess, he said with a chuckle. Just say you don't know the answer. A bit later, Fauci explained that his recommendations and thinking would be guided by the science, as it had been since the pandemic emerged. But here again, he drew a contrast with the prior administration. I think all of us, as David was noting, are feeling, you know, some relief. And yet, boy, from someone who obviously knows what he's talking about, having been silenced for a long time. And Alan, as we talked about many, many times in this show, was... How many times was he threatened to be fired, suddenly being the top guy again and being able to make really sound decisions? All right. I don't know. I silenced the group.
Well, I just think that's how it should be, right?
No, no. You mean I should shut up? No. Here's my question, to my fellow panelists. My ear picked up something from Fauci yesterday that is a little bit different than what is being reported. I thought he was saying nobody is going to shut me up in terms of following the science, and I think. What I came away from listening to him very carefully was that he was basically saying that includes this administration.
Anybody? I mean, it seemed to me that he was talking about basically that science was going to. But
no, he was,
and he also said that he was being directed by the administration to do that to be based on the science.
I think he's held up well. He has certainly held up well over the last year in every public appearance. I mean, he has been devoted to the truth and science, but he's also learned to survive in an environment that he was in by carefully negotiating some of the landmines that reporters and people who question him often laid for him. In an effort to have him speak to, against the Trump administration. So I sensed the tremendous relief in his presentation yesterday.
Absolutely.
And I think everyone understands at this point, it's going to be refreshing that there's going to be one message being delivered by the White House. There will be no doubt sowed from the White House as to the science of COVID-19.
There'll be no recommendations to inject bleach. It's amazing.
We have to take a break, but that's okay. Thank you. Well, we'll be back. We'll continue this conversation, I promise. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Our final go-round on the panel this morning will take place right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Last go round with our terrific group this morning, Alan Chartok, Judith Enk, Heather Buschetti, and David Soares. As I mentioned a moment ago, and the breaking news, which we'll talk about here in our final moments, is that there does seem now to be a plan that Nancy Pelosi will transmit the Trump impeachment article on Monday. The House Speaker plans to send that article of impeachment, launching the start of the former president's trial on a charge of incitement of insurrection over the deadly Capitol riot. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced the schedule on Friday. There will be a trial, he said. Trump is the first president to be twice impeached and the first to face a trial after leaving office. So if I am understanding this correctly, and I'm not... Yeah. At all pretending that I am, Alan, it seems, though, that means that they rejected the O'Connell deal.
That's right. I think that's right. It's just, we've had a lot of letters today. Is Schumer capable of standing up to Trump? This proves he is. Now, I don't know that this fits in with what the president wants, the current president wants, because he needs to get all of this stuff through. So then the question will be, what will the dynamics of the trial look like? The Senate gets to set the rules. They've got the numbers. The Democrats have the numbers. Witnesses won't appear. There won't be witnesses. The name of the game is going to be to get it done as fast as possible.
David Soares.
It's interesting here because I suspect that McConnell rushed to get that request out, sensing and having perhaps great information that our leader Pelosi was going to file that today. So it makes sense that would have come out yesterday, right? But I also have a lot of faith that our Congress, the very famous Congress that we've built roads, the Hoover Dam, and this is a Congress that's done exceptional things throughout the years, can handle, the routine business and also be able to participate in a trial. I have confidence that they can do that. Whether there's a will to do that, that's the question that'll be answered in the coming future.
Judith Henk.
Do you mean it's finally going to be infrastructure week, David? even though the articles have been sent over to the Senate, I'm not sure that means that they have to act on it immediately.
I think they do.
I thought they do. Yeah,
I think they do.
So the trial starts next week.
Yeah, the interesting thing that David just mentioned is whether they can do a bifurcated session. After all, they've got the bodies. They can do the rules. The Democrats. Will they do something in the morning and a trial in the afternoon, or a trial in the morning? So that all has to be worked out.
Wow, giddy up! So you may have a different roundtable schedule next week.
Well, hopefully they'll do the impeachment in the afternoon, and we'll be able to talk about it in the morning.
It would seem to me, Joe, if I were thinking this through, they would do it in the morning. Not that I want to ruin the panel because I so enjoy it, but I think they have to show that they're obeying the rules and that they're going to do that. And then in the afternoon, so if they do it in the morning, the afternoon, well then that's enough for today, and now we'll do infrastructure.
Well, a lot to unpack, and obviously, you know, this is just coming out, so we'll see. I'm just looking at the Times, just moved a piece here. Mr. Schumer and Senator McConnell have been negotiating for days over further parameters for the trial in hopes of settling on bipartisan rules. Democrats are intent on trying to set up a dual track whereby the Senate could still confirm President Biden's cabinet nominees before the trial starts each day to try to minimize the impact of the proceeding on his first days in office. Ms. Pelosi's decision to move on Monday, a little less than 2 weeks after the House's bipartisan impeachment vote, rebuffed a request Mr. McConnell made on Thursday to delay the trial to provide Mr. Trump's newly appointed legal team time to prepare. He had asked that the heart of the trial not begin until mid-February. However, senators could still come to their own agreement to build in extra time for pretrial written briefs to delay the start of oral arguments in the Senate. Democrats involved in the planning indicated they were not entirely opposed to giving Mr. Trump's team some time out of fairness and could use the lag to confirm more Biden nominees. Mr. Schumer said, "I've been speaking to the Republican leader about the timing and duration of the trial, but make no mistake, a trial will be held in the United States Senate, and there will be a vote to determine Mr. Trump's political fate." Mr. McConnell acknowledged Friday that his request had been turned down, at least in part, but he continued to argue Republicans would insist that the president's team be given ample time. Senate Republicans, he said, strongly believe we need a full and fair process where the former president can mount a defense.
You know, politically, Joe, Schumer has to do this. You know, there are too many New Yorkers who think that he was not strong enough during the Trump presidency, and that he could have really come out with a lot more vigor than he did. And they know that. They know that. There's no question about it. I know they know it because I've talked to some people. So that's why he has no choice. He's got to have a trial.
And then what happens? The ultimate question, I guess, is do you get the 17 votes?
You do not.
You don't think so?
No, because, you know, each of those people is looking over their shoulders and trying to figure out whether Trump still has the power to get a primary against them, to get them unelected.
Does anybody think they have the votes?
I kind of do. I mean, I kind of think they do have the votes. I think that's why you've seen more public statements, you know, sort of against the activity, particularly coming from McConnell. I mean, I think that's my view.
Do you think McConnell will vote for conviction?
I think there's a chance.
I got a buck and a half because he won't. That's why all this concern.
I think if the Democrats are able to call witnesses and you have officers that appear, and you have family members of slain officers, and I think the move here is you have to be caught trying if you're a Democrat trying
this case in the Senate, and you have to put the Republicans in a terrible position. You know, I would just use the Hawley effort to continue going on with his nonsense after that whole debacle at the Capitol. That has stained him and damaged him. And I think Democrats are learning from that. And so if you put a lot of police up there, the law and order Republicans are going to have to make a difficult decision.
But to Judith's point, go ahead, Heather.
I was just going to say I agree that it's going to be a difficult decision. But I think in the background, the more we hear about what happened with the vice president, with Pence, I think that it's going to make a case where some more people are going to surprise you and are going to vote for removal, for conviction.
And Judith, to your point earlier, there's still a lot of information to come out. I mean, the talk about what role not only congressional members had, but also that Trump's staff had, is just starting to roll out.
Right. And the refusal to send in the National Guard more rapidly. What's different here is the first impeachment trial was a little complicated. This one is not. This was armed insurrection, rioters, five people tragically dying. And these members experienced it themselves. They are the witnesses.
Yeah. They did.
But I think, as Alan says, the key thing is which way does McConnell go? He's starting to inch in the right direction. You know, he said the profound thing that, you know, members can vote their conscience. Well, I would hope they always do, but he's given them permission. I don't know if McConnell has to vote himself, but he has to give his members the okay. And he's already done that. And, you know, you've got some of these war horses are just tired of all this. They might just say, I'm going to vote the right way and not, I don't care about a primary. So I don't think it's out of the question. And as we've learned in the last few weeks, anything can change on a dime. And rest assured, those Washington Post, New York Times, AP reporters will be working overtime over the weekend to get more, you know, videotape out, more information about Trump's personal role, his staff's role. And, you know, I think this could turn pretty rapidly.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. However, they haven't shown an awful lot of guts. But of course, Trump is not the president anymore. In other words,
he doesn't have Twitter.
Yeah, and he doesn't have the power. He doesn't have the power he once had. That's
right.
For sure. And they may be betting now where their interests are in the future. So you guys make a persuasive case, except that, I don't know how to put this dramatically, but you're wrong.
Okay.
Forget it. Forget it.
I think the single
I've been
most
wrong before.
we hear that all the time, Alan. I think the single most important thing that is changing the dynamic here is kicking Trump off Twitter and social media. He does not have that bullhorn anymore.
Yep, he doesn't.
I agree. That's huge.
David?
Well,
and
David
again,
is collecting
73% of all the 73% of all the misinformation was decreased by 73% on social media because of his removal and the removal of his allies. And I know I'm jumping off topic here, but that is also incredibly scary when you consider how much power the tech companies have to propagate misinformation. I think in terms of the trial, not having, you know, that ecosystem out there, you know, spreading lies and misinformation and allowing for, you know, responsible media to continue to report on facts, that's going to make a big difference with respect to, you know, the trial and how America sees what's happening.
Now, Mr. Prosecutor, the interesting question here, of course, is that the jurors will all be witnesses, right? I mean, you know, I'm sure you've thought about that one. So the people who are all sitting there are now going to have to vote on it. That makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It does make a big difference. And like I said earlier in the show, that many of them who are sitting there as jurors are unindicted co-conspirators. And so that is going to make a big difference. But these are people who are all about self-preservation and clinging to power. And as polling continues to come out over the course of the next several weeks, a lot of those votes are going to depend on which way the wind is blowing and how the and how Americans and their appetite for Donald Trump, measures.
Yep.
We are go ahead, Heather.
I was just going to say it's probably good that the trial happens before he finds another platform.
Right. It's coming. I just want to mention we're out of time. Essentially, we just have about a minute left. But I do want to mention that the other breaking news that we're just learning is that Hank Aaron passed away. Hammer and Hank, of course, best known as the legendary Atlanta Brave and Major League Baseball record holder. He died this morning at the age of 86. That's according to his daughter. Born in Mobile, Alabama, February 5th, 1934, one of eight children, and went on to be one of the greats of baseball and in the Hall of Fame, just less than an hour away from Albany here in the Great Baseball Hall of Fame. So we remember Hank Aaron this morning, who passed away at the age of 86. My thanks to everybody this morning for being so great and for all of your help. And we got through a lot of material, and I appreciate that. Alan, thank you very much. Judith, Heather, and David, thank you. Have a beautiful weekend, a safe one as well. We'll be back right after this.